You're listening to KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me.
The brilliant actress Cloris Leachman passed away in January of 2021. She won an Oscar for her role in The Last Picture Show, directed by Peter Bogdanovich. She was in Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein. She played Phyllis on The Mary Tyler Moore Show and dozens of other roles in films and television. Back in 2009, she wrote her autobiography called Cloris, and I got the opportunity to speak with her. This week, From the Bookshelf remembers Cloris Leachman as we listen back to that 2009 interview. We started our conversation talking about her early years as a beauty pageant contestant.
Yeah, well, Miss WGN, somebody entered my picture in that contest in Chicago. I had been staying there after my second year at Northwestern. And without telling me, they entered my picture in, and I heard about it was when they sent me a telegram saying, congratulations, you're one of the finalists. Please appear tomorrow with a bathing suit and, you know, and talent. Please bring talent. So anyway, I ended up, I wasn't going to go, but he and my house mother insisted I do, and I laughed all the way down. I thought it was the silliest thing I'd ever heard of. I'd never been in a beauty contest. And he got me down there. Well, anyway, I won this damn thing, and I laughed so hard I thought it was hilarious. But then it got kind of serious. They gave me a lot of presents and said, what if you win Miss Chicago? I said, what? What's that? They said, Friday night. This was Tuesday night. Friday night is... So I bought a bathing suit and took a piano lesson the next day, and I did it Friday night, and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I won that, Miss Chicago. Now I called my mother and said, this is getting serious. You better come. So she flew out to see me from Des Moines, and then we flew out to the East Coast to be in the Miss America contest. Well, anyway, I was one of the finalists. I got a $1,000 scholarship, and that helped me a lot because I'd never sung professionally at all. I've only harmonized all my life. I never even sang the melody. Would never learned the words to anything, just da-di-da-da, harmonizing. And so I was there. I wasn't... Well, this is a long answer to a dumb... I don't mean your question was dumb, but I said... Well, anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you look adorable on the float there with your little parasol.
Oh, you saw that. Thank you. Well, that's
which was more exciting, being Miss Chicago or winning the Academy Award in 1971 for your role in The Last
Picture? Oh, goodness, winning the Academy Award, of course.
You know, you're the first guest that we've had on the show that has won an Academy Award, so if you'll indulge me, I want to ask you.
Sure.
Do you remember when you learned that you'd been nominated?
I don't know where I was, but yes.
What was your feeling? Did you
think you'd been nominated? Oh, I was working, they called me on the phone, and they told me over the phone.
And did you think you might be nominated?
No. No. No.
That was quite a performance in that film, and I wonder your physical transformation in the movie. You're not so beautiful in the beginning of the movie, and then you become incredibly beautiful in the middle of the movie, and then you kind of revert back. What goes on in your mind when you're doing a picture like that?
Well, I don't think I'm beautiful. My mother never said I was beautiful or pretty or anything. And the only thing she ever said to me was, you have a mobile face. I didn't even know what mobile meant in that year. But anyway, I think I have been beautiful many times, but I think that comes from inside. And just, I can be beautiful. I can become beautiful, but I am not beautiful to start with, I think.
Well,
I don't think it's makeup. I think it's how you're feeling about yourself.
Are you consciously doing something with your face in
No,
life,
I'm
Patricia?
Just feeling how I'm feeling. You could be so happy inside or so just, I think it's very simple reality, to be, I can't think of the word. It means real.
Genuine.
Yeah, then there's another word.
So you're doing it totally inside.
Yeah.
It's not an external.
No, I don't think so. No.
Well, in the final scene in the picture when you explode emotionally and physically and you throw the coffee. Well, do you remember playing that scene? Did you rehearse the scene? Well, did you rehearse, or how did you get to that level?
No, I just got there and I learned the lines, and he said action, and then we did it just once.
It's so remarkable. I just saw the film again recently, and it's an incredible performance. And so, what about the night you won your Oscar? Do you remember?
Well, I give credit to Peter for that performance because he didn't end it. He didn't say cut after we finished. He just kept it going.
And it was all done in one take.
Yeah, I was upset. I let me do it again, Peter. No. I just learned the lines. I did it. I could do it. No, that's fine. He said, you're going to get an Academy Award.
And he was right. So
but who knew? Because two of the girls, one was in our picture. Can you think right now?
Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen had won New York Critics. And Margaret had won the, something in L.A. Oh, the Golden Globes.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't think I would have a chance. So.
Who do you remember who presented you your award?
Yes, I do.
Who was it?
Raquel Welch.
Speaking of Golden Globes.
Funny.
And when your name was called, can you remember that moment?
Well, I remember when the category was coming up. And I said to my former husband, George England, I said, George, what if I won this thing? What would I say? And he said, you'll think of something. He said, no, I won't. And then I said, I was thinking of my teachers, Lillian Rosedale Goodman and Rose Lorenz and, wait till I think of the other, Cornelia Williams Hurlbut. He said, that's a funny name. And just then they said, and the winner is Cloris Leachman.
Oh,
and I thought, I didn't know they said that quite. I wasn't sure whether they were just announcing who was up for it or who had won. And the place went crazy. I mean, you can't imagine being the one whose name was called with such a gigantic reaction. It was so, I was lifted off my feet, like 18 inches off the floor, and I didn't get back down on the ground for about an hour and a half. It was the most amazing feeling. I really felt 18 inches off the floor. And I heard Aunt Margaret say, sorry, Daddy. And I thought, oh, God, her father's there. You take it, you know, and I'll just hang on your ankles and you can bounce me along the floor. And I'll say, no. I saw Aunt Margaret about a year later at Bob Mackey's. You know, he's the costume designer. And I said, oh, and Margaret. And I said, I'm so sorry. I would have given it to you. She said, no, my father wasn't there. So it was her husband, she said, Daddy, too.
Oh.
I felt a lot better.
So did it really change your life? I mean, do you think of your life as before you won your Oscar and after you won your Oscar, or is it just something that happened?
Well, interestingly enough, I didn't work for one whole year after I got the Oscar.
Really?
Yeah.
But weren't you doing Phyllis then?
Mm.
Barry Tyler Moore, or that came the next year?
No.
Well, because you won it in 72, and I mean, you won it for the year 71, so I imagine they gave it to you in 72.
I was doing Mary Tyler Moore, but I didn't get any other...
No movies.
No.
Speaking of Mary Tyler Moore, you know, I think a really tough trivia question would be this. Name a television series that Cloris Leachman has not appeared in. And I was looking at your...
I wasn't in Bonanza.
How did you miss that one?
I don't know.
I know you were in Gunsmoke. It's one of my favorite Gunsmokes you were in. And
oh, I love Gunsmoke. Wasn't that fun?
You were in You know, I think that I heard, I guess they say that the official beginning of television is 1948, but I saw you were on TV in 1947.
Yes.
There must
and
have been
46,
like
too.
Five people were watching then.
And 46.
What was it like at the dawn
of... I got to New York in August of 46.
And immediately started working on television?
That very day, I worked as an extra in a movie called Carnegie Hall with Marsha Hunt and William Prince. And 4 years later, I was playing with William Prince and Katharine Hepburn in As You Like It on Broadway.
Broadway in the 1950s must have been an amazing, amazing time.
It's
amazing
the beginning, 49-50. Oh, it was fantastic.
So you were running back and forth between Broadway shows and television shows? And...
Well, you just get in a cab and go one way or the other way.
But... it must be a, you know, quite an accomplishment to be able to turn on each role just like that. How do you do that?
Well, you rehearse.
Yeah. Did you get to rehearse on live TV also?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But, oh, we had funny experiences. It was all live TV on this little 7-inch screen.
Yeah.
Oh.
Did things go wrong, or?
Yeah, sometimes. You know Steve Hill, he's on Law & Order.
Mm-hmm.
Plays
right.
An older lawyer.
Sure.
Well, I was in the second, no, I in the second year I was there, I started taking singing lessons with the $1,000 I'd gotten from the Miss America contest. They started the Actors Studio, Aaliyah Kazan, and two others started the Actors Studio. And I auditioned for that. I didn't even know what it was or who Aaliyah Kazan was or anything. And for anybody who doesn't know who he is, he directed The Waterfront, on The Waterfront, and what?
Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah, Streetcar Named Desire, and Wonderful Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in the first group then, and he was our teacher. And he was my teacher for 2 years. And then he left, and I left, because the other people who came in, I didn't think. Suddenly it was a Tower of Babel. They were talking a different language. Anyway.
You were working at the Actors Studio.
Yeah.
And they actually did a television show?
Yes.
You had a few episodes on that show.
Well, I should do one. They have a lot of people who never went to the Actors Studio on it.
Oh, I don't mean that one where they talk to people, which is great, but... You should do that, but according to my little notes here, there was a television program in 1949.
Oh, yes. And when was it? 19 what?
49.
Yeah, I was on two of them that I remember.
Yeah.
I remember I was saying, I have to think of what the line was. I was playing a waitress.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm E-G-G-S-hosted. I'm exhausted. I'm E-G-G-S-hosted.
Well, so you've been on Broadway, you've been in the movies, you've been on television. Are those different?
Radio. I started in radio.
Did you do acting on the radio? What?
Well, in Des Moines.
Uh-huh.
I had my own radio show.
What kind of a show was it?
I'd get advice off the ticker tape and for women, and then I would also plug the Des Moines Registered Tribune.
I had
to write it.
What sort of advice did you give?
Well, I remember one thing I said, you always have to clean your purse out every night. And I do it just what I taught us all to do. Good advice.
I'm going to clean my purse.
I remember being at the radio station when the World War ended in Europe. And I saw it on the ticker tape. And then I was in downtown Des Moines that right then, and I went downstairs as it started gathering and cars kept arriving and people, finally it was just, you couldn't move, thousands and thousands of people, it was thrilling.
I wanted to ask you, do you think that acting for television or stage or screen, are they different skills or are they all...
Well, I'm so grateful that I had stage acting. I could never have had the depth. When you play a role many, 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 many times, people say, oh, my God, wouldn't you get bored? No, you don't. if the very first time you've ever done it, every single time, and things begin to happen, you find things that you had not known about. You just, the more you play it, the more it's easy things come that you hadn't planned.
You were a regular on the Bob and Ray television show?
Well, that was in the summer on NBC in New York.
Those guys are great. What did you do on their show?
And I was, I don't know, you do different sketches and things.
They were funny.
Never got any sleep. I was exhausted that summer because we didn't have any air conditioning in the apartment that I was staying in. It wasn't my own apartment. And it was just hot. It was so hot, you could be comfortable if you had a wet towel over you, but you couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just awful. I'd get there just cuckoo tired. And I remember either Bob or Ray on the show, he said, and now we're going to show you how to cook your turkey. And they had this tiny, skinny little turkey, no fat on it at all, just all legs and beak. And he showed us how to cook a turkey. But I laughed so hard, I never said a line. I just remember laughing the whole show because I was so tired I couldn't control myself.
I wish I could see that one.
Oh, but oh my goodness, they were funny, man.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're listening back this week to my 2009 interview with the late Cloris Leachman.
Cloris Leachman is my guest. She was almost April Claiborne, but you never...
It's not Claiborne, it's Claiborne, C-L-A-I-B-O-R-N-E.
Oh, okay, or Clorox Bleachman.
Yes.
That's Tallulah Bankhead called you. Well, but you never changed...
No, she didn't call me that.
Oh, who was it who called you that?
I did.
Oh, you made that one up yourself.
Yeah.
Well, but nobody... You didn't change your name, after all.
Well, a lot of people wanted me to. Hal Wallace was determined that I was going to change my name.
Mm-hmm.
And have my nose fixed. He wanted me to have my nose fixed.
Yeah.
But I tried to change my name, but it never worked. Well, I was an understudy for something, and the stage manager said, tonight, the role of Lover will be played by, excuse me, and he ran off stage and says, what's your name? I said, Cloris Leachman, and he ran out. I said, Cloris Leachman. Everybody went, oh. And so I thought, they're going to be sorry for that. And they were. They applauded after the first act, and the curtain went down. They were just, it was very exciting.
You were understudying a bunch of roles all at the same time?
I went on for Mary, there were two parts in that show. Then they came down to see me. It was for Roger Namerstein. And they came down to see me. Saw me in it, and then sent me immediately across the alley. I was at the Music Box Theater on 46th Street, and then I went through Schubert Alley there to the Plymouth on 45th Street every night and checked in at both theaters. And that was Helen Hayes' play called Happy Birthday. And there were five parts in that show, so I had seven parts in two plays. And then later, I was cast to be the real sexy high school girl in Come Back, Little Sheba with Shirley Booth. And Sidney Blackmer was playing her husband, and he said, we made a rule in Equity, and you're the one who they cited for having two plays with seven roles. You can only be in one play with two roles, I think, at the most. They made that rule.
Have you ever gone, you know, a week without working since you started?
Well, I told you when I got the Academy Award,
right,
I went a year without working. And then one year I changed agents and I joined CAA in order to meet Jack Nicholson and be in a movie with him.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't work for 3 whole years.
Wow.
3 years. That's a long time.
No television or anything?
Nothing.
Wow.
Not one single thing.
But other than that, it seems like you work every day. You were
No, I don't. It seems like I do, but I don't.
Yeah.
I worked a lot. I know I used to see myself, I'd be on two stations at the same time every once in a while. I got 2 Emmy Awards in one night. When I got one of them, I went out, and it wasn't like a stage straight across it. I remember going out into the audience on the stage, went out to accept my Emmy. Bob Hope was sitting down lower, right below me. And I was so astonished because Daddy used to listen to Bob Hope religiously. And we lived way out in the country in Des Moines, Iowa, not on a farm. It was an acreage. And that's what we did on those nights, you know, listen to the radio with the kind of radio that's pointed at the top and curved on both sides down. So for me to be getting an Emmy with Bob Hope sitting below me, I couldn't believe the upside-downness of life sometimes. And then after I got my Academy Award, I had to fly to New York and then Florida to work. And I had to be on the Johnny Carson show. And I was staying at the Plaza, and I walked into the Waldorf room, which is the big dining room there, beautiful room. And they had upgraded it. Later they made it back the way it used to be, but they had made a raised platform in the middle of it. And I walked in and was being shown to my table, and somebody said, "Oh, my God, that's Cloris Leachman." Clearly, I heard it. And I looked up, and it was Jack Benny.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that amazing? And Daddy used to listen to him on the radio, too.
Uh-huh.
Those two comedians. So Bob Hope and Jack Benny, isn't that funny?
Were you ever starstruck? Did you ever see somebody and go, "Oh, my God, that's, you know, whoever"?
Clark, so Betsy Drake was in the Actors Studio at one point later with me. And
married to Cary Grant?
Well, we were riding in a cab somewhere, and she said, "Oh, I'm so in love." And I said, "Is it Cary Grant?" I don't know why I said that. It just came out of my mouth. We both just couldn't believe that, yes, that was who it was. Well, anyway, then I was in a play on Broadway, and she came backstage with Cary Grant. And he walked in, and I said, "You've lost weight." I mean, it didn't hurt him. That's the first thing I said. "Oh, you've lost weight." I saw, let me think of her name. Oh, Mrs. Miniver.
Greer Garson?
Greer Garson in Beverly Hills one time. We were both running across a side street, and we said, "Hi," you know. I said, "Oh, hi, Greer Garson." She said, "Oh, hi." You know, it's kind of as if you know them, but of course you don't.
Well, do people do that? They must do that to you because, you know, you've been in their
home.
Oh,
all the time, and especially after Dancing with the Stars, it was every third person in the world, any city, any country. Oh, my God, and they have that funny look on their face that is only from Dancing with the Stars. Because it's different from other things that I've done, like, you know, Young Frankensteiner or Phyllis or something from Mary Tyler Moore. I can always tell which one it is.
By the way they react.
Yeah, if they're black, it's from Facts of Life. If they're Spanish what do you call that?
Hispanic.
I know it's from Spanglish.
Oh, uh-huh.
And it was from Dash of the Stars. There's just a funny look on their face that...
My mother loved you, by the way, on Dancing with
the
Stars.
She what?
My mother loved you on Dancing with the Stars.
Well, I got a little out of hand, but I don't quite know what I did. I just know I got out of hand.
She said you were funny. You were great.
Well, I had a wonderful time, really memorable, and I appreciate it. And the organization that is Dancing with the Stars is incredible.
Well, it was quite an accomplishment.
I mean, you can't do anything that has not been anticipated in the organization of it. They just everything is, you're protected and just so taken care of.
Well, yeah, I mean, it must have been very difficult for you physically to do it.
Well, most
you must
people,
be in great shape.
I think, auditioned the big winners for about 6 hours, but I only went for a couple of hours. And then I had to take a blood pressure pill before, if it were too high, they wouldn't work.
Uh-huh.
Till it went down.
Wow. Well, that's great.
But I rewarded myself with eating wonderful restaurants, and so I kept gaining weight. I already had a fat stomach that I was trying to lose, and And I kept gaining half a pound every day with Dancing with the Stars because I'd go out and eat.
Your book, it's an unusual book in so many ways, and it's a wonderful book.
Thank you.
The structure is very unique. Why didn't you just sort of go with a typical chronology? Why did you write your book the way you did?
Well, my mind doesn't work that way. You talk about something, it reminds you of something. Just the way we're talking now.
Yeah.
I told you a lot of other little stories.
Yeah.
You'd ask me one question.
Well, and I want to thank you for hugging me at the end of your book.
Oh, you're welcome. It's true, though.
Because when you get to the end of a book, you know, you have an emotional attachment to the person that you've been, you know, whose voice has been in your head, and then she hugged me, everybody. It was very nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I mean it.
Did you ask permission from the men with whom you had dalliances to name them?
Well, one of them's dead.
Right.
And the other one is too old now, doesn't matter anymore.
Well, you did. You named names, which is kind of an unusual thing to do.
Well, you don't know how many names I didn't name.
Well, let's hear them now.
Well, I'm going to write a book about the men I didn't have an affair with. Sam Goldwyn.
Uh-oh. I didn't have an affair with him either.
No, I didn't.
No, neither did I.
No, but I mean, but it almost came to that.
Oh, uh-huh. Was there like a casting couch kind of situation?
No, he came to, I think it was a St. Regis, and I went over there for the meeting, and his wife opened the door. She's a darling, darling woman, so sweet to me and good, and he took me down for hot chocolate. It's gone now on 59th Street there, and was just really flirting with me and wanted to sign me a little contract, a 7-year contract, you know, it wasn't good. It didn't look like it was going to be a good idea for me.
Yeah.
So I said no.
Now, I want to ask you about your picture, Kiss Me Deadly. Your first picture, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that movie, that's a bizarre movie. That's a very strange movie.
It is.
What do you make of that picture? Do you remember the movie well?
I didn't have a very big part in it.
But you're great in it. You almost wrecked his car. The first line of the movie, you almost wrecked my car.
Why?
I don't know. It's an odd movie.
Hmm.
Ralph Meeker, what?
He was a good actor, I think. Wonderful. And I also worked with him in I'm not going to be able to think of. Who's the American playwright that was not Tennessee
Eugene O'Neill.
Yeah, it was Eugene O'Neill. Ralph Meeker was in that.
Interesting actor.
Very, and very good, yeah.
Lassie? What kind of a co-star was Lassie?
Lassie was wonderful, but they had to have the understudy because they would show Lassie what to do.
Yeah.
And it was a female. She'd go straight down the mountain instead of circuitously. And they couldn't have that. So the next take, they use the understudy. That was the funniest dog. I used to laugh because they'd bring that dog on, bring it by with a little rope around his neck, a leash. And it was really happy, really, really delighted to be working. And she'd just wag her tail like crazy. And they'd finally get her to stop wagging it and stand there. And then everybody go to work, you know, and she was alone because the lighting is what was going to work. So everybody was up in the rafters getting all the, up high over her head, getting the lighting done. And she was all by herself in the room. And she'd stand there and stand there and stand there and stand there. And finally, she'd lie down. Oh, God, and then finally when they'd take her away, then they'd bring Lassie on, pulled on a carpeted thing with four wheels. I told her she got up and she'd stand there beautifully.
So Lassie had a stand-in.
Oh, many, and many other ones, you know, stunt doubles and all kinds of things.
You're saying Lassie was not quite as smart as she appears on the show?
Oh, smarter.
Oh, good.
He knew how to get down a hill. You don't have to take all those side turns. But I thought I had just had a baby, my third baby. I had three little boys 18 months apart. And I didn't want to work. I had new agents at William Morris. I had joined William Morris, and they said, well, come down and meet us. I said, well, I don't want to work anymore for a while because I just had a baby. I said, well, come down, say hello to the guys. Oh, all right. So I went down there because I nursed all my babies till they bit me always. And, you know, I couldn't have. And so here I'm down there. Well, by the time I left, that was when I was hired to do Lassie. I went out of that meeting with the part of the mother in my lap. I was hired to do that.
This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. I'm Gary Shapiro, and this week we are listening back to my 2009 interview with the late Cloris Leachman.
Well, let me ask you about a few other shows, if you don't mind. Because you were in so many of my favorites, and you did a couple of Wanted Dead or Alive with Steve McQueen.
Oh, God. They would get so mad at me because I guess I took too long in rehearsal. I didn't know, though, then that I had to learn that. But Steve was wonderful. My former husband, George, gave Steve his first job on stage in, it was a drawing room comedy. It nothing like Steve is or was.
Mm-hmm.
can't think of the name right now. And he was just dreadful in it. But he still had that star quality.
Yeah.
He came to the set the first time we saw him. He had a gun over his shoulder and a girlfriend, a kind of a drippy blonde. And he was a sexy guy, cute.
Wonderful presence.
He used to take all our boys out and taught them how to motorcycle.
Yeah. He was great. What about that scary episode of The Twilight Zone? Do you remember anything about that?
With the boy?
Yeah, he was the boy, and he controlled... It was Bill Mooney.
Billy Mooney, yeah.
And he controlled you.
Yeah.
That was a scary episode. I had nightmares from that one.
You did? Well, you were a little boy then.
Yeah.
No, that was wonderful. I loved doing that one.
Rod Serling wrote that one? Did you know Rod Serling?
Yes. Well, I flew on the plane with him somewhere. We were on the same plane. We weren't. I didn't know him yet, but I had a big argument with him about his smoking, and that's why he died, of course.
Yeah, he was only 50 years old when he died.
Not one single person that I've ever loved in my life is alive. All the smokers are dead.
Mm.
Every single one. My father died at 53. My sister, my middle sister, died at 67. Everybody.
You never smoked?
Never once. Except in, Mel Brooks made me smoke for Young Frankenstein.
Mm.
He and his assistant are on the operating table. In a big, deep clinch and everything. And I come in and I say, you know, your sweetheart has arrived from America. And I take a puff of a cigarette. I suggest you put on a tie. Oh, I had nightmares about that. I'd never smoked, and I've never smoked since.
It's hard to smoke when you don't know how to smoke, isn't it?
What?
Isn't it hard to smoke if you don't know how
possible.
To smoke?
Possible. You think, no, don't make me smoke. They tried to make me smoke for Ida, the grandmother on Malcolm in the Middle.
Mm-hmm.
Please, I'd be in my knees in tears. Please don't make me. I can't. But, of course, it wasn't tobacco. It was some other kind of leaf.
Oh.
They use for those occasions.
I see. Well, some other kind of leaf, yeah.
Well, it wasn't your kind of leaf.
Oh, not my. What about, now you did another show that I'm interested in. It was called Johnny Staccato with John Cassavetes.
John Cassavetes. Did you see that?
Well, I haven't ever seen it. I'd love to see it. I've only seen like one episode of it.
God, I wish I could get it. I'd love to see that. I remember it and how proud we were of it. It was a good one.
Yeah. Cassavetes was a fine actor.
He was excellent. And I love Jenna, his wife.
And, well, I mean, we have to talk a little bit about Phyllis and the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
Well, it was a fantastic role. You were great on both shows. You both, you had your own spinoff, Phyllis, which was wonderful, and Mary Tyler Moore, which was incredible. Was that a great experience?
Oh, absolutely, 1,000%.
How did you get involved in that show?
I don't know for sure, but I think that there was a very, very fine woman who worked for CBS and NBC. I think she did all the casting for Mary Tyler Moore.
Well, it was, I guess it's probably the thing you're, maybe the thing you're most known for. I don't know.
Maybe well, it depends on what group.
Maybe the thing you're most known for is Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, no doubt. What was that woman's name? She was, well, I guess it's not important, but she was a dear, dear woman.
Who, your casting?
And she was in, I'd known her since I was 20 years old. She had worked in my first agent's office. God, I can't remember her name right now.
Well, there's a lot of names to remember.
Well, that's one that I can't quite remember. I've said it for so long.
Well, Cloris Leachman, your book for our listeners is called Cloris. How did you ever come up with that title?
Well, we couldn't think of a title. I wanted to call it my autobiography, spelled O-U-G-H-T-A, biography.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and I enjoyed reading it so much, and it's been such a treat for me to talk to you today. Thank you for...
It's a quick read, don't you think?
It is, yes.
How long did it take you?
I read it in... I just started reading it one morning, and then before I knew it, I was done late in the evening. So I just sat there and...
2 days, I'm a slow reader.
Read it straight through. I'm a very slow reader, but I couldn't put it down. It was a great book.
Really?
Yeah, I just enjoyed it. Well, I mean, it's the kind of book that I love, you know, because I love hearing about Marlon Brando and Paul Newman and all that stuff. You were a friend of Marlon Brando's?
Yeah, very close.
What kind of a guy was Brando?
Brilliantly funny.
Really?
Brilliantly funny and original, absolutely original, his kind of humor. Well, he just loved George, my former husband, and George loved him. They were the closest of friends. And I think Marlon always kind of wanted to be like George. They both did. Wanted to be like each other, I think. When Marlon did The Ugly American, George produced and directed it. And it was the first thing he'd ever done in his life. Can you imagine?
Wow. Where did they film that?
In America, I think.
Mm.
But we shot a lot of stuff, too, in Thailand. And so we were there with our three little boys. George and I were separated by that time. But I offered to take the children so he could see them. Because they were too young to send and be taken care of by other people, I thought. We had the most wonderful time, and we got back together when we came back.
Well, you've had an interesting relationship with him, I imagine, because he's the co-writer of your book. Or how did he, in what way, what was his, how did he serve you in the book?
Well, he knows all of my stories, or almost all. The ones that are in the book, he knows. He didn't know about couple of love affairs that I hadn't told him. But I'd had to finally because the book wasn't long enough and I thought, oh, should I or shouldn't I? Well, they're not too damaging, I think.
They're sort of sweet, especially that one with Andy Williams, but we'll let the readers read that one.
That was the funniest thing. When you're afraid of having sex with somebody, he got so sick he couldn't even hardly, he shouldn't have been out.
Yeah, but he had a date with Cloris Leachman.
Well, I'd known him since he was 6 years old and I was seven. His brother was eight and he was the one I wanted. He was one I had a crush on, Dick. He never knew it, of course, but the little boys would come out and have a picnic at our house out in the country sometimes. Anyway, I think he always had a little crush on me. So we both finally now, all these years later, we're married, and my husband was gone out of the country, and so was his wife. And I felt that it was only fair that I have an affair, because he'd had some.
I agree.
So it was mostly for that reason. I wouldn't have done it otherwise. As it turned out, I didn't do it anyway. Nor did he.
Well, but so I was asking you, your husband, what your ex-husband, what kind of a relationship do you have with him?
What kind did I have?
No, now. I mean, if he helps
you. Oh, with George or with Marlon?
With George, since he helped you write your book. And
I love and adore George with all my heart forever and ever. The only one.
But you're no longer married.
No.
Oh, that's pretty fascinating.
Well, it is. It's the damnedest thing you ever saw.
Well,
George once said sometime that somebody will have a big, big telescope out way past anything they've ever seen before. Way huge things, way out in the distance. Can't even imagine how far away. And somebody will be looking up in the sky, no, looking through that telescope, and they'll see somebody and it would be Cloris and George still trying to figure it out. Well, you don't understand. I'm with you. Well, you don't understand. Well, I want to be understood. Well, they'll still be trying to figure it out. All we know is we adore each other and respect and admire.
What haven't you done? What are you going to do next?
Well, I thought I'd go to Harvard.
Well, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Time to go to school.
Where am I now? Up in the...
You're in Montreal?
I'm in Montreal.
Making a picture?
Oh, I'm making the most... I'm turning into a porn star. I don't know what happened.
Really?
Because... did you see the roast I did, Bob Saget roast?
It was obscene.
Did you see it?
No, but I know about those roasts.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, it was so... I mean... one of the funniest things I said, I think...
yes, what did you
now,
say?
Now, I'm going to tell you something about Mary Tyler Moore that you've never heard before.
But please do.
And I say, every time Mary had an orgasm, she threw her hat in the air. Isn't that funny? You immediately see her throwing her hat in the air every week, you know, on the show.
She was the most satisfied sitcom star in history.
Well, anyway, the thing I'm doing now is, I had not heard about it. It isn't even on yet. It's going to start in January. And it's called Blue Mountain State. And I tell you, what I do usually... Well, you usually wouldn't see it except unless you paid for something in your hotel room.
On television
in your hotel room.
You're putting us on now.
What?
You're putting us on now.
No, I'm not.
Really?
It's just wild but funny.
I won't be watching for this. What's it called?
Blue Mountain State. I think it's a college.
Okay.
It's for 18 to 35 year olds, supposedly. But believe me, a lot of other people are going to be watching. All right, darling.
Thank you so much for
talking.
Thank you
so much.
You know, I was born in Iowa, by the way.
You were?
Yeah, Iowa City.
Oh, my gosh.
Ain't it a small world?
It's the smallest world I ever knew.
It was just a pleasure, a treat, an honor to speak
with
you.
Thank you very much.
I hope we get a chance to meet in person sometime.
Well, anytime. I'm around all the time everywhere.
I'll be watching for
you. I went from Berlin to Prague to Barcelona to New York to L.A. I went to the bathroom. I went to Detroit, Des Moines, back to L.A., back to New York. Now I'm in, where am I?
Montreal.
Montreal. And all of that was just one after the other, after the other, after the other. God.
Well, you're amazing.
Well, you have to go there if you want to work.
And I guess you do.
Well, I always was either building my house or the kids needed things. I always want my children to be enriched. So I'm trying to be responsible for that aspect, at least. Or for the grandchildren, you know.
Yeah.
All right, my dear.
Thank you so
much.
Carry on. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas and Ollie Jackson. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.